It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I've been awake for 1 hour.
Oh.
In that time, I have already driven to get bagels. It's Friday. Excuse me. It's
Bless
bagel
you.
Day. That's, you made this happen. You got to live with it.
I've been up for 3 hours.
That's stupid.
And I just downed a big old mug of hot chocolate. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Oh, no. We call that Mormon caffeine. So Monday, when we would normally record, is Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be in a variety of different states returning from a trip.
And
see my family on Labor Day weekend, as is common.
In a variety of states, both literally and figuratively?
No, I'll always be physical.
Okay.
I
mean, I thought, but, you know, conscious states is what I was thinking.
No, I know. And that's very rude. How dare you? So I'll be in Illinois and then I'll be in Iowa, but we're not doing a podcast that day, is the point.
Mm-hmm.
And William's all doing therapy on the other days, except Friday, except this Friday is all fucked.
Yeah.
He's getting office furniture.
Yeah.
So in order to deal with this, we are recording next week's episode at 8:30 in the morning on Friday. And I'm still waking up. So it's bagel day. I'm still getting my caffeine. You go ahead. Do your thing.
Do my thing.
Oh, the podcast.
You're not going to throw your... No, you're eating, so you can't throw your hands up and say... Welcome.
I mean, I'm here.
Whatever. Everyone.
We got a quorum. It's an official episode.
To the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world where a guy in a right side out caftan eats a bagel while his significantly less talented co-host takes over.
See, it's not easy coming up with him.
I'm William, and this is episode 703.
I'm Tony. No, I think this works good. If you're just joining us for the first time, we don't always eat bagels.
No.
But when we do, it's Brugger's bagels.
Is
locally made, locally grown, and up until Kumail Nanjiani, the most famous graduate of my college, Grinnell College, was the founder of Brugger's Bagels.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
People will argue that point because there were a lot of other important people that went to Grinnell, but I don't know.
So Brugger's
senators and shit, but
Brugger started in Iowa. Is it? I didn't know that.
I don't know that it started in Iowa.
Oh.
I know that the person who started it went to school in Iowa.
Oh, okay.
At Grinnell College. That being said, I think it did. I see Iowa's got a lot of them, and it doesn't extend super. It's starting to grow, but Brugger's is regional to our area, definitely.
Okay. Okay.
Like back home, no Brugger's. Illinois, at least where my in-laws are, no Brugger's.
Oh, so it might be an Iowa only thing, or
I don't know yet, because I think it's expanding. But I don't know. I don't care. That's how it works. I realize because I have terrible sound setup where my microphone is somewhere on the laptop, I can get away with eating better because I don't have the microphone right here, which is where it's terrible. It's still probably awful for people, but I blame you.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, I'm sure you do.
As I was saying, though, this is an opportunity here because it's only been like 3 days since we last recorded an episode. I haven't had a lot interesting happen in that time. But last week, we just talked about medieval times. So now we can talk about regular things in between. So how's your last week or two been outside of medieval times?
It's been stressful with trying to get this office set up. I can't tell you how relieved I was to finally get the keys yesterday, because I wasn't even sure that was going to happen. They agreed to let us have access to the office a week ahead of, very graciously agreed to let us have access to the office a week ahead of when our actual lease started and everything. But, you know, on our end, we had to provide certain stuff. And one of the things was a proof of insurance, right? I don't know how long this has been the case, because I've talked to other people who have rented, you know, commercial space, and they haven't had to do this, even in other parts of Iowa.
I mean, therapy's a dangerous job. They got to make sure they're covered liability wise. You can fuck somebody up with that stuff.
So yes, they expect you to take out your own general liability on the thing there, and it wasn't just this landlord or whatever. Every place we looked at, and there were several places that wrote up, you know, prospective leases and everything, and they all had that. And even you know, that new thing they do now, newish thing they do now with like shared workspaces. Do you know what I'm talking about?
WeWork.
Yeah, that kind of
one that's all fucked up now. Or
right, that kind of thing.
Gone, yeah.
Even those. The ones we found required you to get general liability insurance. All right. Okay. So yeah, we can do that. It's no big deal.
I mean, you look like you're going to cause trouble. There's a reason I made you do it before we started this podcast. You look like you're going to cost somebody some money. One way or another.
I mean, I'm apparently a very untrustworthy looking person. Because a lot of people make that judgment.
Which is what I've always said. I trust you implicitly now. But when I first met you, I'm like, keep that fucker away from me.
Yeah, right. So
without general liability insurance.
Yeah, right. Well, so, and you can't just get the insurance. Obviously, you've got to have a document that proves you got it. Again, all simple, straightforward stuff, especially today. You know, because they can send you a PDF of your insurance binder or your certificate of insurance or your proof of insurance, whatever it is, they could just send it to you. Well, we had the hardest time, first of all, finding someone like with a reasonable rate. And then when we finally did, it's like, oh, okay, so we're, you know, we'll have the documentation in plenty of time. No, they had all kinds of technical difficulties in making that happen. The documentation finally came through on Thursday, but I didn't know because the people from, you know, my headquarters, if you will, emailed it to the wrong William. They thought they emailed it to me, but they emailed it to a different William. So I'm sorry. It not Thursday. It came Wednesday. They had it by Wednesday. And I'm sweating this whole time because I have to meet the realtor and everything. And I'm like, oh, the document's not here. The document's not here. So Thursday, like an hour before I had to meet the person, I called them up and I said, all right, last ditch effort. You know, do you have it or don't you? And if you don't, then I'm going to have to kind of negotiate with this person about this. And he said, oh, no, we sent it to you yesterday. I said, no, I didn't get it. I would have loved to have gotten it because then I could have relaxed, you know. But anyway, I finally got the document. I sent it to them. They said, yeah, this is great. And I went to the office.
This is other William. Can we blame him?
No. He's a relative of theirs. He's a relative of theirs. So, so anyhow.
Grandfathered in then.
So up until an hour before I was going to meet this realtor, I had no idea.
That joke deserved more. But, all right.
Up until an hour before I met the realtor yesterday, as we're recording this, it'll be a week ago when people see this, but up to an hour before I met this person, I had no idea if I even have keys to this office. And we've already told people to deliver furniture there the next day. So, you know, there was a possibility I wasn't going to get the keys. I'd have to cancel that furniture or convince the realtor to say, can we put the furniture in there? This is new furniture. This isn't a trick to get you guys to store crappy furniture. I mean, I just handed you a check for the deposit. I mean, you know, can we at least let them put the furniture in there if you're not going to let me have keys to it? But nope, everything was fine. Got the keys. It's all good. So that was fine. See, I did. Go ahead.
That absolutely sounds like a nightmare to me, but I also know you and know it was about 10 times worse than it would have been for me. Like, this is your specific thing.
Like, yeah.
It's the not knowing. No. If you had just known up front you were screwed, you would have rolled. But it's the superposition.
Yep.
You hate that. You hate when it's like, I don't know. I can prepare for any option, but until I know which one it's going to be.
Well, and I don't like to. I don't like surprises, you know, I don't. I'm not that bad at dealing with things when they come up. In fact, I'm actually pretty good at it, but I don't like it. I wish, you know, especially when it seems like there's no reason. It's like this, you know, like everything, we're all on board with this well in advance. How come this can't just work? But whatever, it's fine and it's all good. And I'm very excited about it because this is like, you know, there's all kinds of milestones in this journey of, you know, you start school, you finish a quarter, you finish the program, you pass your test. But, you know, none of it would mean anything if you don't have an office or someplace to practice in, right? I mean, this is what it's...
You being handed the keys to your office is a shot in the montage of... Like you right. Getting your life together before you go back at the end of the third act to proclaim your love for the woman where you two separated due to a misunderstanding.
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
If this didn't happen for some reason, none of the rest of it would even matter. It would just be a big expensive thing that I went through. So
depending on the film, like you might start wearing suits or grow a mustache or something to show time passing. But no, you getting handed your office keys is definitely one of those shots.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
I'm very happy. And the space is great. And I can't wait to get started in it. So it's all wonderful. I did also see something. I saw, oh crap, is it called Horizon or Horizons? That chapter one, that thing that.
The Kevin.
Yeah.
Costner.
Kevin Costner thing. I saw that.
I don't know. You're the only person who's seen it.
Well,
he's got three more of them.
I know, and I like westerns, so I'll probably see them, but it was not good at all. I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, he directed it, which the direction was probably...
No, this is Kevin Costner has for a long time believed he was God's gift to filmmaking.
I don't know.
And his career is littered with problems due to his ego. And he has long now had enough money that he's like, I'm going to just make shit. I mean, I really liked Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, I did too.
And people loved him in, what was it, Yellowstone, Longmire, whatever it is.
Yeah, Yellowstone. Yeah, it was Yellowstone.
But I feel like I've done this with him, and I'm just, I don't need more of whatever the, I don't need more Cowboy Kevin. I've had enough Cowboy Kevin.
It was a long time ago when, you know, Waterworld and all that stuff, and people were like, this guy's got, you know, well, and I told you, I saw Postman recently, again.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was a little
bit of motherfucking thieves.
Yeah. There was a little bit of that in there, but that's been so long ago. And I've seen interviews with him since. And it's like, he seems like a, you know, like in interviews, he seems like a different guy, a pretty humble guy, really. I thought, oh, okay, well, he's learned some things over time. He's probably, so when he was going to finally do something like this again, I thought, oh, well, it'll be different. And it's not, it's kind of the same. Like,
this is stuff. So it's much his really thing. Very good. I keep thinking he was in Tombstone. But he wasn't, right? But it feels like
no, he wasn't in Tombstone. But he did a Wyatt Earp thing, didn't he? We were just talking about it.
Yeah, he did, right? Wyatt Earp around that time.
Yeah. And I seemed to like, I remember liking that. I like Tombstone better.
It was fine. Like, he could do this. And I mean, he had Dances with Wolves or whatever, but I'm like, stop now. I mean, it's a little bit like Cameron with the water, except Cameron is a long and storied director and practical effects designer and producer. Kevin Costner is an actor.
Yeah.
I'm tired of both of them, but like one of them, it makes even less sense for them to keep doing it. And it's Cowboy Kevin.
You know, that does make sense. What you're saying, because you know, one of the things about the Iowa film scene, you know, when I was a lot more active in that, is I
Kevin Costner was always trying to get involved.
No, I noticed there wasn't a lot of collaboration among Iowa film creatives. There was definitely a sense that everybody had their vision, right, and they wanted to put it out there, and nobody was good at everything. Nobody. I wasn't good at everything, for sure. In fact, if I could have found collaborators, I would have, the role I would have liked a lot was like being a writer producer. You know, I write it and then I can do producing. I didn't even think, I thought I was a competent director, but I knew there were more competent directors than me. And I certainly knew there were people who were more competent in figuring out, you know, shots and cinematography, and I knew people were better at editing than me, even though I was a pretty fair editor too. You know what I wanted, writing and producing, that's what I would have done, and I would have had other people handle the rest. But a lot of people I met in the Iowa film scene, like me, were only really good at, like, you know, a few things, but didn't want to collaborate with someone else who was better at it. So you had people who's, you'd watch their stuff and they looked pretty, like they were good cinematographers, for example, but the script was lousy, the direction was lousy, the editing was lousy, and they seemed to have no awareness of, oh yeah, I probably should have gotten help on that. You know, I mean, I'm not even saying I was a great writer or producer. I'm just saying that's the thing I was probably best at, and I would have let someone else who was better at those other things do those things.
I think when you're dealing with a lot of independent, homemade, you know, shown at festivals in northern Iowa kind of stuff, you're not a producer or a director or a writer. You are a filmmaker.
And
in your head, that encompasses everything.
But about many times, you're only really good at one aspect of that.
Oh, yeah.
And you need to let other people come in and help. Well, so Kevin Costner, like you were saying, Kevin Costner's an actor. And that doesn't mean he's going to be good at any of the other stuff. And apparently he's not.
I know this first of the four Horizon movies or whatever, that's not done well.
Yeah.
It has not made a name for itself.
And I'm disappointed because the thing is, I think some of the ideas are actually pretty good. There's some, I think, some pretty good ideas in it plot wise. And
I'm in general in favor of Horizons. I like looking at them.
Well, okay, so
also my favorite video game series.
The basic idea, which I think is could be done very well, is that there's a particular piece of land that's called Horizon, that some developer has purchased and is publicizing as, you know, come here and start your life over and build a life here in this place we're calling Horizon, out in the West somewhere.
Is it, maybe this is going to be a prequel to Event Horizon. Oh, that would be cool.
Okay, but anyway,
that would be so cool.
It becomes this, I think they do a pretty good job of this in the thing, actually. It becomes this sort of almost mystical place because people see all these ads wherever they're at in the United States, you know, and each person responds to it in a little bit different way. And each person interacts with the advertisement in a particular way. And then if they actually get there, they interact with a particular way. And there's, of course, there's Native Americans who they don't recognize these new people and what they're doing as being legitimate, and they attack them and all this stuff. So this place and even the advertisements for this place start to take on almost a character of their own. And
it's just the devil. He's doing the advertisement.
It's just really, it's pretty, it's pretty interesting. And they, you know, they'll go from, I mean, this idea is interesting, and they'll go from this person who's having this experience to this person. And that's all I think, wow, this is actually a really good idea, but it's really poorly executed. And then some situations they cut to don't really have anything to do with that. And actually Kevin Costner's piece doesn't have anything to do with it. You're like, how is this? Why are we?
No, see, you're not watching. Kevin Costner plays five different roles. This is very much Eddie Murphy in like The Clumps or something. You can't tell because of all the prosthetics, but he is several people in the movie.
I mean, some of these storylines are pretty well acted. They're not very well written, but they're pretty well acted. And like I said, they're pretty well conceived. So I am interested to see, you know, what happens in some of these. So I'll probably keep watching it. But I'm so disappointed that they couldn't take a fairly good idea. Like the elevator pitch for this was probably really good, but Kevin Costner just can't make it happen. And part of it is, it feels like this should have been like a limited series on cable or something. But he got a four picture deal kind of thing. And so then he just crammed a whole bunch of crap in the first one that didn't even really go together. And it didn't really make sense where he cut.
I think this is one of those where he had to front a bunch of his own money too. I think you need to prep yourself that four of them may not actually get released.
Well, I think, well, that'd be surprising because they did show scenes from the future ones. That's another thing. Like it was already done. So I don't
some know. Of it's been already shot, but I don't think the whole, maybe, I don't know. I haven't followed along with this much. Because I was just like, more cowboy? Yeah.
If it was a 10-hour limited series, and then with those extra hours they edited it better together and made it make more sense. Then maybe the only real weakness, the strongest weakness, would have just mostly been the writing and maybe a few directorial issues. But I think because they made it into four movies, 3 hours, by the way, this thing was 3 hours. It just looked like a rushed, everything crammed into one place in a way that barely made sense kind of thing. Like before they even released it, they probably thought, yeah, this doesn't look good. This isn't working. But I don't know.
Oh, white people.
Oh, well, we'll watch the rest of them because there are some interesting things. I really would like to see how they go. How about you? What do you have to talk about? You surely watched some movies or TV shows or video games or something.
I did. I watched a couple of them. Sorry, I'm getting notifications about my upcoming colonoscopy. Woo!
Oh.
We watched. A bunch of shit. We watched Prey, the most recent and supposedly best of the Predator sequels. I've only seen two Predator movies, and neither of them were Predator. Is the best of the two I've seen. I saw Predator 2.
Oh.
And then I saw this. From what I know of the third and the fourth one, I'm definitely willing to believe it's better than them, but nope. I mean, there's cool action sometimes, but it's also really weird. It takes place in the early 1700s, and it deals with a band of Comanche. And it's very weird to have just finished Reservation Dogs and then watch Prey, because Reservation Dogs portrays a very realistic, nuanced, and complex set of dynamics amongst the various people living in this village on the reservation. Prey doesn't do that. Prey is a band full of real chauvinist, misogynist people, men and women. And then also our main character, who is not that, but is a petulant teenager who might get everyone killed trying to prove she's a big girl now. And I hate it. I hate all of that. When that's set aside and we're just dealing with the action stuff, it's fine. But the truth is, the Predator's really dumb. We discussed this on the way to Medieval Times.
Yeah.
The Predator is a poorly thought through movie monster and antagonist, and a very poorly executed, a very poor execution of that poor idea.
Yeah.
In almost every movie.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Agreed.
And I told William the secret to enjoying Predator movies is you consider them to be the alien equivalent of, like, that dude, that dentist who went to Africa to shoot that lion. Like, these are just the dudes who are like, I paid a lot of money, I got the suit, makes me invisible and shit. Let's go kill some stuff. And then we'll go back home, play some golf. I don't know. So yeah, if you do that, then it's more fun. I do still want to see the original, but then I'm probably done. Speaking of probably done, we watched Furiosa.
I have yet to do that myself.
It's on Max.
I know, I should see it. Maybe I'll see it today. I don't know.
I don't know if I go that far.
Well, no, I probably will see it.
I don't like Mad Max movies. It's weird that it took me seeing five of them to come to the realization that this grim, dark, post-apocalyptic story isn't for me. But I did come to this realization. So, Furiosa is solidly in the middle, or I guess the third best for me. First one's terrible. I know there are people that disagree, but not amongst any good-hearted people. First one's terrible. Second one, I get most people think is real awesome, and it is better than the first one. I still think it's pretty terrible. Beyond Thunderdome kicks ass. You and I debate whether or not it's actually a good piece of filmmaking. It's fun. I've watched it a few times. I'll watch it a few more. It's good. I'll have a good time with it. Fury Road has just got some insanely amazing action.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's nothing else really. It is, I think, maybe not on purpose, less male gazey than most movies of its ilk, and that's why we all got super excited that it was a super feminist thing, kind of in the same way that we all got excited that Wonder Woman was this hugely feminist thing, even though it did one thing, representation, which is good, but it just only did that.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. That's right.
And Furiosa is the same thing because everybody's like, oh, it's super feminist, including me. I was also on that, and now I'm looking, I'm like, oh, it just sort of filmed a lot of the women as though they were women. I mean, as though they were people,
Yeah, human
not women,
beings.
I
Yeah, it
guess.
just it met that low that
Which,
base
but
basic low
for a
point.
post-apocalyptic action movie, that's a pretty big,
Correct. That
it's
is
on a
correct.
very short list.
Yeah, you're right. You're
And
right
it
about
has
that.
some real awesome action or whatever. This is worse than both of those, but better than Road Warrior, in my opinion. So that's where it lives. Also, I do not believe the character in this movie grows up to be, like, actually, like, very soon after, turns into Charlize Theron's character from the first one, or from Fury Road. It doesn't feel like that, but whatever, I don't care. Last night, not last night, Wednesday night, we watched a folk horror movie from last year called The Lord of Misrule.
I don't think I've
That
heard of
had
that one.
Tuppence Middleton in it, and oh, I haven't remembered this actor's name now, but he's really having a moment right now. I know him as, in the British version of The Office, he was the jerky salesman who would come to visit. He was Dave Koechner's character, but in the British version. He also was the father in the Vavitch.
Yeah.
He has an impossibly deep voice. That's how you mostly can tell who he is.
Yeah,
But he is.
he does he did the voice in he does some video game voices, is what I
That
want to
would make
say.
sense.
Yeah.
He was the patent looking general guy in the Creator movie. It took me a while to pinpoint that. But anyway, he's, I guess, the antagonist in this film. And it's very standard folk horror shit. Tuppence Middleton and her husband and daughter have moved to this little tiny village. And she's the new vicar, and there's a scary festival to celebrate ancient things. And then the daughter is missing, and she's like, ah, and everybody's like, oh, it's probably the Boogans got her. It's fine. And this is, spoiler alert, the town's a big cult for Boogans. That's how all these, I mean, it's sort of Wicker Man. It's sort of Wicker Man.
Yeah.
It's not exactly Wicker Man, but it's always, sorry, I guess it's a spoiler, but these kind of movies, literally, I've never encountered one of these kind of movies where it didn't turn out there was a secret cult to Boogans somewhere in the village. That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's why all the villagers are acting so strange.
Yep.
In every version of this, like, we spend an act and a half on, and don't get me wrong, I love these movies. I love to see how strange and what the exact lore is going to be. But it all boils down to, in the village, there's a special secret cult that worships Boogans. That's just how it is. So that's what happens here. It's not a great movie. It's a fine movie. It has all the pieces that a story like this should have, and it is well performed. They sometimes feel like they're pieces from different movies. It holds together in terms of the building blocks of a kind of movie like this. The movie itself doesn't necessarily flow. The lore doesn't necessarily entirely make sense. This constant problem in movies like this. There's a lot of good reasons why you make your folk horror British most of the time. they have the older history and the and some of the weird, you know, pre-Christian things and stuff like that. But the other reason is there's much more sense of social propriety and not wanting to sort of step out of line within British culture, because, and this matters because these movies are full of situations where if I was the protagonist, like where people say some weird shit or piss on the floor, or their head spins around, or they're like, oh yeah, no, the devil's got your kid, it's fine. And in these movies, every protagonist is like, whoa, whoa. And if it's a woman, they just sit there and look like they're going to cry. And if it's a man, they like shove the person against the wall and we're like, what did you mean? And they say, I was just kidding. And then we cut to the scene. And nobody's ever like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you know you're saying weird shit, right? Like, this is not... I demand to follow up. You can just say it was like a joke, but I don't believe you. My child literally is missing. What? Tell me about these boogans. What the fuck is going on? And nobody ever does that. And in this movie in particular, it drives me crazy where people do stuff and you're just like, oh no. I'm like, no, you ask, you're like, what is, you get that you're acting all possessed and weird, right? Like, you know this isn't normal. Why are we all acting like this is normal?
Does it ever bother you though in these types of movies how like pre-Christian religions are treated as evil? I mean, that seems like a really boring a premise to me always when that happens.
Yeah, it weirdly it happens less than you'd think nowadays. And actually, I've seen this come up in different. Often, it's not. It's a bastardization, or it's just a, like whatever the boogan is isn't a pre-Christian god of the harvest. It's just like a fucking monster who lives in this particular neighborhood.
Okay.
Who we happen to have been worshiping for billions of years or whatever. But also, these things, yes, pre-Christian deities are always evil in the same way in horror movies that mental illness always means you're going to be like a serial killer. Like,
yeah,
I just accept. It's just a different version of Satan made it happen. Hmm. Like, all of it, when you're so I have known village traditions like this. And this is not what they look like. Yeah, so at this point, there was a time, I think, when it bothered me. But nowadays, I'm like, no, it's just more horror movie shit. Like, all of this is just a variant of it's secretly the devil.
I know, so, but it's like, to me, it's all of a, I think maybe it bothers me, and it will continue to bother me, is because... I don't like, in general, the scandalization of earlier cultures. Like, they were dumber or, you know,
yeah.
even white indigenous cultures being scandalized for their beliefs and practices. Is, you know, that bothers me every bit as much as when they do it with other people from other continents. It's like, why are you doing this? Why are you treating people who live before? Well, if
that bothers you, then you just need to watch a movie where the stupid and secretly evil ones are the organized religion, because there's plenty of those also.
There's plenty of those also. You're correct about that.
You get, the point is Satan is everywhere all the time. He was in that bagel I just said. That's
true. He is an equal opportunity employer, the devil.
But no, it's that thing, like I've talked about before, like realistic portrayal of mental illness, even if very respectfully done or whatever, in a horror or a thriller,
mm-hmm.
No, thank you. It's very much the home invasion of mental illness for me. I'm like, this could really happen. This is awful.
Yeah.
But when they do it and somebody's just got the crazies, like, so hard that they're a murderer now, I'm like, yeah, no, that's... they played with the Ouija board of life in this case. Like, this isn't actual mental illness. This is the devil. But the devil this time is not enough Thorazine. Like, whatever. I don't care. When they get realistic, then I care. Yeah. Then I'm like, okay, then you're making me actually deal with this shit. That's not why I watch these.
Yeah.
And then I would rather you be horrifically off from realistic than just a little off from realistic. Then I'm like, fuck that thing.
Right.
Whereas this version, I'm like, we don't need to critique. You know, I know, this is made up dookie nonsense. It's the devil. It's the devil. The devil is in the details and also mental illness in these particularly remote asylums that pop up in horror movies all the time.
Yeah.
And it's all the pre-Christians' fault. Except when it's the Christians' fault.
Yes. I mean, so help me out here. You know more about this than I do. Lovecraft, with my limited interaction with his material, he seems also to like to cast earlier cultures as particularly susceptible to the corrupting cosmic forces and stuff. Am I wrong about that, or?
I mean, he, in so many words, is very clear that other races are primitive savages and stupid and everything
right,
like that.
He was racist, that's right.
He was like very explicitly wrote it into his stories, no questions asked, definitively racist.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, literally the dark skinned folks are just inherently built stupider than us. They are an earlier form of, so yeah, no, he was all about that kind of shit. As opposed to the evolved God fearing white man, I guess.
Well, do you think there's a relation then? Do you think that he had an influence on horror that persists to this day a little bit in what we're talking about, or it's just a coincidence those two things are true?
Neither of those answers. I think it's far too often just built into the genre of horror, of what came, because that's the other thing, is dark and ancient powers that you shouldn't be messing with. Because they were primitive and stupid and they started worshiping Boogans and they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you get noble savage. They were more in tune with this and they know how to deal with it. But now you just have like guns and lanterns. And so the Boogans are going to fuck you up. if you knew the ancient arts of something, probably painting something on your face, because we love that in movies, then you could just defeat the darkness. Luckily, there is one left dude of whatever it is. Usually it's Indian over here, but you know, we have one dude probably of browner skin than yours who remembers the old ways, and he's going to come in and help. He's going to die, but for a little while it will seem like we need him. Then you can just shoot it or set it on fire or whatever, like you do, white man.
I mean, it all sounds very silly the way you describe it, though I'm sure you're describing it accurately. So how does this...
No, and it is all very silly. This is the thing. Do I think there are some issues tied in with racism and this view of evolving society and earlier societies are more primitive or stupid? Absolutely. Do I think these movies are good enough to warrant this level of critique? No.
Okay.
Because they're all like this, and it's all stupid. And none of them did it on purpose, but none of them took even the slightest effort to deal with it. So it just is. It's just one of the things that come in horror movies. It gets noticeable if you find somebody who's not doing it. Show me that. But I don't even know what that would look like nowadays. But yeah, it nowadays, this kind of shit is so built, baked into the tropes that it's only noticeable to me when they don't do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I just assume. And I'm at the point now where I can start a horror movie and I'm like, yeah, okay, I know how the rest of this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much what happened with Lord of Misrule. The ending is not, like, I'm not shocked by the ending, but I wouldn't have necessarily guessed the ending. And if you like these kind of movies, it definitely qualifies. But it just, it felt like they were just hanging bits and bobs together, and it's just not, and then sort of plastered up. The story does work, but at so many points, it's like, don't stop and think about it. So it's fine. If you like these kind of things and you're just like, got nothing else to watch, it's perfectly functional. And I think acted pretty well. All right, I want to get on this question we've been sitting on for a while, this email. We need more of them, people. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Email us with them. Please.
So you'd like me to read the email? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. The subject line.
Master's degree suddenly can't remember how to type.
Well, I didn't know if you were done with your spiel there.
Yes, read it.
He says,
email boy.
It's just a game, isn't it? This is Mick writing in.
Hello, Mick.
It seems like it's been a while.
It has been.
He says, hey, hatheads. How did you know I've got a hat here today? In the past couple years.
Wearing a hat. You always have hat.
In the past couple years, there's been a trend in horror movies and TV that has made me sit up and actually watch this genre, from Squid Game to Circle to Escape Room, and of course, The Hunger Games. The idea of the win or die game has really found its niche in modern thrillers. As a lifelong game geek, this has offered a competitiveness to the tired kill 'em off one by one trope of horror that actually perks my interest. He's saying that this new form actually interests him. My id has always thought that shows like Survivor needed some spice to being voted off the island, and horror is, in my opinion, designed to appeal to your lizard brain. But what do you think about the death game genre? Interesting move, or just another boring gambit to grab attention? Now, so where does Saw fall in this?
I was going to mention Saw.
I don't watch that, so I don't know how it fits into the question.
Two subgenres are coming to mind. And I think Mick is only talking about one of them. He might be talking about both, but that's gets weird because I really like one and so not so much the other one.
Okay.
So I think Mick is very specifically, and he says it in email, talking about the competitive ones. Hello, six people. We're going to do some fucked up patty cake games. And only one of you is going to make it out.
No.
And if you want to live, for that to happen, the other dudes have to die. So get to it.
Yeah.
And there's various, sometimes it's straight up battle royale, but some like Hunger Games, but other times it's like, no, these are our competitions we go through, but they're in the end, there can be only one. Squid Game, great example. Hunger Games, also good example. I tend not to like these. Cause I think in the same way that I'm not particularly competitive. Like, I'm like, this, so this almost guarantees everybody's gonna suck. like, and again, it's going to get into this more display of man's inhumanity to man. Fuck that.
Yeah.
But there's a second kind of sort of death game in these movies where it's not competitive against other potential victims. It's either a one-on-one thing, like, well, Saw is often that. Like, we have to play a game or you're going to beef it. And it's not like, some of them are competitive, but some of them are just like, you have to solve this maze and find the cheese before my giant cheese knife cuts off your face. Or I know a lot about the Saw movies, but I will not watch them. Or a cooperative version. The six of you have to solve my Rubik's Cube in 10 minutes, or I'll nuke you. Like, whatever. And these I'm more okay with. And these I'm interested in. The whole short-lived sub-subgenre of horror movies that are like deadly escape rooms. I'm kind of into that. That being said, these are often a precursor to just really elaborate, nasty deaths, and I'm less into those. So, like, I'm really interested in the concept of the Saw movies and some of the storylines. I will never see a Saw movie because gross. But insofar as more of the competitive version, I am less into it. I agree with Mick. I think it's sort of a refreshing change. It certainly spices up things from the slasher genre, which is just on its face ridiculous. Like, you have to do so many things that, like, so much mental gymnastics has to happen. That's how come, in general, slasher movies don't scare me at all anymore. They used to a little bit. And you could say, like, oh, they're more realistic because it's just a killer. But I'm like, yeah, the number of, like, random stupid things or silly coincidences that have to happen for the people to get killed in slashers is insane.
Yeah.
Whereas billionaire offers a lot of money to down on their out street people if they'll just murder each other. That sounds much more realistic. I saw a movie that was really bad. I'm not going to tell everybody what it's called or recommend. It's a terrible movie. It has some just awful scenes. I maybe regret seeing it, but part of its general premise is a billionaire tricks people into coming to this, like, isolated area in the woods, and he has literally got a escape mental page. He's got a Michael Myers that, like, he stole from a prison for the criminally insane. And he just has cameras everywhere, and he just watches this Michael Myers just wipe people out. And again, terrible, terrible movie. But like, the whole first act is dealing with the latest victim or whatever, and we see the process by which she basically gets tricked into putting herself into the situation. And it was interesting because it seems very feasible. And the entire movie at a certain point, and it helped that the villain kind of had a familiar bearing, but I was like, in 5 years, we might just find out Elon Musk is doing this. Like, it's far too just, like, possible. Both in terms of what I think his resources could do for him and what I think that fucking lunatic is capable of at this point. Assuming, I mean, I'm not saying he has a penchant for watching the criminally insane murder young women. I'm saying if he does, unlike most people, he will have options other than the darker realms of fan fiction online.
If he does.
If he does, if he does, he has the privilege of being able to manifest this in ways the rest of the people who want to see insane killers murder young women do not have at their disposal.
Sure.
So watch out for that. Both young women and insane killers from prisons. All of you watch out. If this man approaches you for whatever reason, I mean, at least get a lawyer to look over the contract.
Oh man, that's hilarious. It's not easy.
And we didn't mention one thing about our awesome weekend. Maybe the best part. We saw a Cybertruck in the wild.
Yeah, we did. Threw right past
I am fascinated because it appears that Elon Musk's stance not withstanding, everyone on the internet hates the Cybertruck and thinks it is the dumbest looking, least practical, and arguably most dangerous vehicle on the road today because it has a lot of fucked up design issues that can maim you or kill you. And we all seem to agree. We also all seem to lose our fucking mind if we see them in the world. And are like, oh my God, check it out! I almost made you take pictures.
Like, oh, well,
I hate that the Cybertruck exists. You could not pay me to have one. I would mercilessly mock anyone I knew that owned one, but I saw one and I flipped my shit. William can attest. I stopped the conversation because in the rearview mirror, I was like, hold on. And he's like, what? I'm like, Cybertruck!
William's
like, what?
What I didn't tell you was just earlier that week, I saw two of them in Coralville, at the Coralville Hy-Vee. There were two of them.
Okay, that now I'm uncomfortable though.
Yeah, I don't.
There should not be that many of them.
I think they were traveling together, and I think they were just. I think they were just passing through town. Yeah.
That all that being said, it was being driven by a 16-year-old douchebag-looking dude, and also is much smaller in person than I thought it was.
I guess I thought that too. It was an older.
This was more like a cyber. Crossover.
Yeah, there was the
cyber truck per se.
So there's some the reason I think they were both at Hy-Vee in Coralville is because they have electric charging stations there.
Oh yeah.
One of them was actually plugged in over on where those are, and the other one was parked in the regular parking lot. And I saw the guy who owned it putting stuff in the back that he just bought at Hy-Vee there. He was probably our age, or maybe closer to mine than yours. I mean, I don't know. I couldn't figure out anything.
He looked like a douchebag. You can say it. He looked like a douchebag.
And he didn't really. He wasn't a white guy.
That is shocking.
Yeah, he just seemed like a normal guy. But I don't know.
There's a lesson here, people. No matter how normal and with it, people seem there might be a Cybertruck owner hiding in there.
I mean, I suppose people have a stereotypical idea of what a Cybertruck owner would look like. Or I guess I don't particularly, I suppose, because I didn't surprise me anything about him. But now that you mention it, there probably is some, like you said, Elon Musk stands or whatever. I'm sure that people have a very stereotypical picture of what that kind of person's like. He didn't look like what I imagine that stereotypical picture is. For one thing, it wasn't white, because I think white is probably one of the boxes you mark off there. Younger, probably.
Think of libertarians.
Yeah, but you think libertarians are mostly white, young, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. So, I mean, he didn't
look. Man, like I'm trying to rib William on callbacks to earlier conversations we had, but he's already checked out. He's just like office furniture. I have one question. We have to go, but I have one question. So did you like buy individual pieces of office furniture, or did you like go someplace and be like, I'll take one office worth, please.
Well, so when you furnish a therapist office, like some of it's not is like living room furniture, right? It's not just stuff you typically have in an office. So we did get a sofa and a love seat that match. We did do that. We got two accent chairs that match. But other than that, we did get a desk. And we'll probably get some end
Independent,
tables and stuff.
it's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, more or less.
Sorry.
Yep.
I didn't know. I thought maybe there's a place that's like, and here's the dimensions, and it's a therapy office. Go. And
Well,
they're
I
like, here
mean,
you are.
you can walk into a furniture store and find a vignette, right? That's got
That's true. That's
the
true.
stuff. Like, we could have seen a vignette and said, you know what, that couch, that love seat, and two of those accent chairs, we'll take it. And basically everything in the vignette we could have gotten, I
But
suppose.
your muse didn't speak to you.
No, yeah, we didn't get
Go.
everything from one vignette. Could have.
She wants these.
There are a couple places that look, the little things they set up, and you're like, oh yeah, that looks good, and that looks good. But yeah, it is being delivered from one place. We didn't like order from five places
Yeah,
instead.
yeah, yeah,
We did order from one place. So, and there are some pieces we don't have. Like, we probably will have some end need actually some end tables. You need to put a Kleenex box, nearby where the person you're talking
You
to
just
is.
take your copy machine paper, because you have to have a copy machine, and empty out the box, and then the box is side table.
Oh, and you just flip it over and, yeah,
Yeah,
sure.
I did it in college. It still works. My bedside tables, my wife has a real bedside table. It's got a lamp built in and everything. My bedside table is a plastic padded square bench, not bench, seat, stool. It's like 2.5 feet tall. I believe I got it. As a sophomore in college, it was in the apartment I was subletting, and they were like, we don't want it, whatever. So, like, more than 25 years ago.
Wow.
And I'm still using it as a side table.
Gosh. I don't keep anything. I don't know if I've got some older things, but
I don't keep anything, I just don't replace anything.
oh
If
yeah.
you came to me and were like, here, I got you a new side table, that thing would be out at the curb in a flash. I just haven't ever bothered. And it still works for now. Anyway, on that sad note, send us emails. Because otherwise, this is what we talk about. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also, go to TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. With your comments and your questions and stuff, just to chat, or you could chat here on YouTube, whatever works. William's got stuff to do, so just remember what Cowboy Kevin says: stop worshiping Boogans.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.